Well, we've made an interesting transition week over week. We had the Good Shepherd last week, and today we could say that we have the Eternal Gardener in the Gospel, right? This text is taken from the famous Vine and the Branches passage in St. John's Gospel, chapter 15. So that's where we are, the first part of that chapter 15. And here Jesus, who is the vine, right, that he calls himself out as the vine, he spends considerable energy explaining how God the Father, who's the vine dresser, right? He's the keeper of the vineyard. He continually throws out the bad branches and prunes the good ones. Hopefully that's all of us, the good ones, right? The ones that bear fruit. And so he prunes these good branches not to be mean or to be sadistic, to harm them unnecessarily, but only so that they will bear even more fruit. That's what he wants for us, friends, to bear superabundant fruit in and through him. And that happens through ongoing conversion. That's the pruning that he does with us, right? And it oftentimes doesn't feel good, but it's for our good and it bears much fruit. It brings us into his glory. What does he use to prune, we might ask? His word, of course. Not just his words, the written word, the holy word, but the word made flesh, ultimately, right? Jesus says, you're pruned by the words that I gave you. But he is the word. The word becomes flesh within us. That's the pruning process for us. I am the vine, you are the branches, Jesus declares. Whoever remains in me and I in him will bear much fruit. Now, this makes pretty good sense to us, right? Seems pretty sensible. We're connected to Jesus. Good things are going to happen. Not the easiest thing, but it kind of makes sense to us. On the flip side, he cautions us, without me, you can do nothing. If you're not connected to the vine, you're not being nurtured by the vine, you're just going to wither up, right? Without me, you can do nothing, he says. Not just the things you're going to be able to do will be reduced, maybe a little less than now, nothing. Nothing, he says. That's a pretty stark statement, right? Try as you may, but you'll end up dried, withered, and then eventually thrown out for burning. If you don't stay connected to him, without me, you can do nothing. That's why it's so essential to stay connected to our vine, to our Savior. By this is my Father glorified, Jesus continues, that you bear much fruit and become my disciples. That's what gives glory to the Father. Not you paying him lip service and then going and doing whatever you want. That's not what Jesus says here. No. By this is my Father glorified, that you bear much fruit and become my disciples. That's what you're created for, right? That's what I was too. Now, we know that this requires sacrifice, requires pruning, right? But as Jesus says, just a few verses later, verse 11 of John 15, I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and your joy may be complete. That's what he wants for us. That's what happens when we stay intimately connected with him. His own eternal joy is in us, and our joy becomes complete. And lest you might come to the conclusion that Jesus isn't talking about all Christians. I don't know about me. I'm doing pretty well. I'm not sinning. And if you think that's weird, I hear that kind of stuff in the confessional fairly frequently, actually. If you think maybe he's not talking about you or maybe your holy grandmother or whoever, he's talking about all Christians. And we have an example of that today in the first reading where even the great Saint Paul, now he's not Paul yet, we hear him identified as Saul still, but even he needs a tune-up, as we see. Characteristically, he's full of the zeal that Paul always has, and he's none too shy about sharing the good news, even and perhaps especially with those who don't want to hear it. Paul's not one that's scared to go out and talk to people about the Lord, right? He wasn't when he was a Pharisee. He's not now even when he's a Christian. Initially, when he shows up in Jerusalem, people are still scared of him, right? They're not sure. They might have heard that he converted, or maybe they hadn't yet, and they're like, this guy was a terrorist, right? He was dragging Christians out of their homes last time we saw him. So they're scared of him. They might not know that he went from Pharisee to Christian, or they might not believe that it's in earnest. But then, as we heard, Barnabas took charge of him and then smoothed things over, told people, it's all good. So that, after that's cleared up, He's moving about freely with them in Jerusalem, and he leaves such a distinct impression, we could say. That's kind of putting it lightly. A distinct impression on the Hellenists, the Greek-speaking people there, that they try to kill him, right? That's the kind of impression he left. Maybe a little too eager and a little too forceful. We don't know exactly what was said there. But so the disciples immediately pull him out of Jerusalem and send him back to Tarsus. Get him out of there because it was getting a bit troublesome, right? And so that's a little bit of pruning that's going on there. Paul probably would have wanted to stay there and try to work with those people, but maybe he was going a little bit too far. Huh? So we don't know what the conversations were like, but we do know that they took him down to Caesarea and then put him on a boat to Tarsus. This is one of the first instances where Paul began to learn that untamed zeal can actually cause more harm than good. He's full of zeal. He's full of good stuff. He's full of the good news, but he had to learn that you have to share it in ways that people can digest it, right? And this wasn't the last time that people wanted to kill him, right? In various other places. But he learned well. In fact, he became the greatest evangelist ever, right? So he knew how to preach the good news, and he wasn't afraid. He wasn't afraid to go and talk to people that gave resistance, and so many of them were converted. Okay, now we can return to that excellent first line of today's second reading. And we return to some of John's writings there. We had John's gospel, now we have 1 John in the second reading. He says, "Let us love not in word or speech, but in deed and truth." It's not merely about having the right words. The delivery of those words, the disposition of heart, and the lived example must follow suit. You have to have all those together to be effective, right? In short, truth with charity. You probably heard that before. We share the truth, yes, but with charity. We won't beat people over the head with it. Paul might have been doing some of that in his early days there in Jerusalem. Yes, if we just spout off true words, they're true. But if we do that without internalizing them and considering the audience, then we don't really belong to the truth. John was talking about that, belonging to the truth. And we can easily get caught up in ourselves and then led astray from what the Lord wants us to do. But as John assures us, God is greater than our hearts and knows everything. He understands everything. We don't. Sometimes we think we do, but we don't. But God does. And that's great assurance. So be not afraid if you don't understand whatever the Lord might be wanting you to do, or if you have fear in your heart about accepting Him or about sharing the good news with people or whatever it might be not afraid. Trust in God above yourself, because He's got the answers. He's got the understanding. So trust in Him, and He will guide you to the truth and enable you to share it in meaningful ways that touch other hearts. John also gives great practical guidance for building up this trust that he's talking about, this confidence. He says, "We have confidence in God and receive whatever we ask, because we keep His commandments and do what pleases Him." Not because we kind of keep the ones that we like and do what pleases me. No, we keep His commandments, all of them, and we do what pleases Him. Those who keep His commandments remain in Him and He in them. There's that remain. John is at pains with that word remain all throughout his gospel and the first letter. Remain in the Lord and allow Him to remain in you. So crucial. As a matter of fact, that's the best thing you can possibly do. The best thing is to remain in deep, intimate communion, relationship with Him, right? But you don't just, it's not about being in a relationship with Him, kick back in a hammock and drink a daiquiri kind of a thing, right? No, this relationship is active. It's purposeful. It's you're on a mission. He also calls you to share that fruit that comes from this relationship with many others, to spread His goodness. And if you're not doing this, sharing the good news, living a vibrant Christian life, if you're kind of putting your Christian life under the carpet, then you aren't loving others as He commanded you to do. Commanded all of us to do, as a matter of fact. And then, of course, this pertains to individual reactions, yes, when we have encounters with our friends and our family members and our co-workers and other people in our lives, but all the more in some group settings, and think especially for parents. So important to share the good news. You can't be afraid. The Lord, He gives you these children. He wants you to raise them in the faith, right? and many other positions that that a lot of us adults, well, even some younger people, are in positions to influence others. We're meant to share the good news in meaningful ways and according to His will. Therefore, brothers and sisters, don't be a fruitless, withering branch on the vine. Every single one of us has done this at one point, maybe multiple points in our lives. Don't go back there. Don't go back there. Don't try to go it on your own. We do this all the time. Our culture really encourages us so strongly to do it. Be independent, right? Do things on your own. No. You can do nothing on your own, Jesus says. Nothing. You got to stay connected to the vine. So, if you can do nothing without Him, why not wholeheartedly embrace Him then, right? It makes sense. Remain in Him by keeping His commandments and teachings, all that's been given down through Him throughout the ages, and you will bear great fruit. That's what He tells us. Jesus doesn't lie. You will bear great fruit if you remain in Him and He in you. So if you walk this path of ongoing conversion, allowing Him to prune you, right? Allowing the Father to prune you too, go into confession. That leads us to the Eucharist, confession, prayer life, all forms of penance. They lead us deeper and deeper into the Eucharistic mystery, which is the ultimate fruit, the Eucharist, right? Building up the mystical body of Christ here on earth. That's what we're oriented. That's all, everything we do should be oriented toward that. And also, ask the Lord what fruit He wants you to bear. Don't just assume, oh yeah, I should do this, I should do that. No, that's probably okay with the Lord. Ask Him. What kind of fruit should I be bearing here, Lord? Allow Him to become flesh within you. That's, again, there's going to be some pruning there, but it's a beautiful, wonderful, necessary process. And then He's going to bear a great abundance of Christian fruit in and through you. Christian fruit. Notice I said, the very kind of fruit that our society desperately needs now. Then you will be a shining example of how important it is to live to glorify the Father, not yourself. To glorify the Father, and to love not with empty words, but in deed and in truth, in the things you do, and certainly in the truth of the Lord. This is simply the only way to true flourishing, friends. And so why not walk that path? Now we're going to conclude, as I often do, with the opening prayer, which is spot on for what we're trying to do here. It really pulls things together. So I'll give it with a little commentary, and then I'll give it back to you without the commentary. Almighty ever-living God, constantly accomplish the Paschal mystery within us. The Paschal mystery, we're talking about the death and resurrection and ascension of Jesus. Not the screaming baby that's walking out the side. We're talking about Jesus here. Accomplish the Paschal mystery within us. That's an amazing statement, right? The Paschal mystery that Jesus won for us. Immerse us in that in every moment. That those who are pleased to make new and holy baptism, completely new creatures we are in holy baptism, made entirely new in His grace. So yes, that those you were pleased to make new in holy baptism may, under your protective care — He's the one that does it, right? He's the vine, we are the branches, we need to be connected — under your protective care, bear much fruit and come to the joys of life eternal. What a spectacular prayer, right? So now I'll give it back to you in full without any commentary. And I encourage you to take this to heart and really kind of meditate on this today. It's such a beautiful conclusion to our reflection. Almighty ever-living God, constantly accomplish the Paschal mystery within us, that those who are pleased to make new in holy baptism may, under your protective care, bear much fruit and come to the joys of life eternal.